Okay, we're beginning here at the end of Lamed Hey Amud Bet. Just to review quickly from yesterday, we're going to start at the last narrow line on Lamed Hey Amud Bet. Tanur Banan. Yochol Yotzei Adam Yidei Chavuto B'Tevel Shelo Nitkan. A person, you would think a person could be Yotzei Yidei Matzah with Tevel that was not properly fixed. Mar says, Kol Tevel Nami Halo Nitkan. What's unusual about this Tevel that it's not fixed? That's the definition of Tevel. Tevel means something that didn't have the proper trumot, masrot, matnot taken off of it. Ela betevel, shelo nitkan kol tzorcho. Now we're talking about tevel that was partially fixed, meaning it was partially rectified in some of the trumot, or some of the masrot being taken off, but not completely all of them. Shenitna mimenu truma gedola, velo nitna mimenu trumat maser. Truma gedola was taken off of it, the 2% that's taken off in the beginning, but the trumat maser was not removed from it. The maser rishon along with the trumat maser was not removed from it. Maaser Rishon, the Maaser Rishon was removed from it, but Maaser Shini was not removed from it. Va'afilu Maaser Ani. Maaser Ani, which is the lightest form of Maasrot that's taken off, it's a Maaser that only has a requirement being given to the Aniim, but has no requirement in terms of Kiddusha, despite the fact that it has no Kiddusha associated with it. If it's still in part of this produce, then this produce remains Tevel, and it is problematic. So that's what we're saying over here. Minayin. How do we know this is true? Talmud Omar, lo tochal alav chametz. Now you may not eat the chametz. Mi shi'isuro mishum bal tochal alav chametz. Somebody who has a problem, the isur, the problem with this could be chametz. Yotze ze shein isuro mishum bal tochal chametz. El mishum bal tochal tevel. The problem here is that this item has an additional isur here that could be problematic. Matzah, as we saw before, has the juxtaposition of the adjacency to chametz, and therefore we have this tension between the two of them, which is that only matzah that could become chametz is good matzah. So that's what the Gemara says here. Only something whose issue, only issue can be, the isur chametz can be utilized on the Pesach. But something whose isur is because of some exogenous variable like tevel, that's going to be problematic on Pesach. So Mar says, wait a minute, I don't understand. What do you mean that this doesn't have an Isur Chametz? This has an Isur Chametz, and it also has an Isur Tevel. So it has an Isur Chametz, why isn't that sufficient to allow you to use it for Matzah? Bisura de Chametz lecheicha nazla. Where did it go? Where did it disappear to? So I'm Rav Sheshet says, Ha mani Rabbi Shimon hi. This is the authored by the position of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon believes, Amar ein Isur Chalal Isur. He believes that if you have one Isur, another Isur cannot ride on top of it. Meaning that one Isur takes up all the room on an item, and if now another Isur wants to show up, we don't allow it to take hold. An example of that, Tatanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ochel Nevela bi Yom HaKippurim, someone who eats Nevela on Yom Kippur. So the item was a Nevela before Yom Kippur, so it had an Isur Nevela. So the Isur Karet of Yom HaKippurim does not take hold on this item because it was asur to eat even without Yom Kippur. It was asur beforehand because it was a Nevela. So in this case, obviously, as Rashi points out, we're dealing with the case of Shogeg. So in a case of Shogeg, eating on Yom HaKippurim will not result in a Korban Chatat because the Nevela or the Isur Nevela already predates or pre-exists before that of Yom HaKippurim. Now, what's interesting here is Rashi and Tosafot both discuss the issue. What happens if it became a nevela on Yom Kippur itself? What happens if the animal died on Yom Kippur itself? And that's how it became a nevela. But that means that it happened at the same time that the nevela happened, so did Yom Kippur. So Rashi claims, no, that there still is an Isur that pre-exists here, and that's called Eiver Minachai. While the animal's alive, you cannot eat it because of Eiver Minachai. As soon as it dies, that transfers or changes into an Isur nevela. So there was never a moment where the Isur of Yom HaKippurim could be chal on this item because it went straight from being osur for Isur Eiver Minachai to being osur for Nevela. And therefore there's no relevance of Yom Kippur over here. Tosafot raises an issue that by Isur Chalal Isur, there are certain exceptions to the rule of in Isur Chalal Isur. There's something called Isur Mosif, Isur Kolel. Again, they're not the discussion of our Gemara here, but one of those exceptions is called Bevat Achat, if it happens simultaneously. And even Rabbi Shimon agrees, if two Isurim happen simultaneously, then we do allow them to devolve upon a single item. So in this case, where Isur of Yom HaKippurim and Isur Nevela happen simultaneously, we should allow it to take hold, and there should be a problem. So Tosafot says, no, he disagrees with Rashi that it was a problem of Eiver Minachai beforehand, but rather, he has an Isur called Eina Zavuach. This is an interesting idea that Tosafot raises here in the Gemara in Shavuot and in other places. Tosafot, as opposed to many of the other Rishonim, believes that there's an Isur on the animal prior to Shechita. Most people believe that, yes, there's an Isur Eivir Minachai, after the animal dies, the Isur Nevela. If you shecht it, then that's Matir, that allows you to eat this animal. But you're not removing any Isur when you shecht it. On the other hand, Tosafot believes that an animal that is not shechted is called Eina Zavuach, not shechted. And there's an Isur called Eino Zavuach, an Isur Aseh that derives from Shechita on the animal. So if one eats or consumes such an animal, the violation of this Isur Aseh of eating from a non-shechted animal. And therefore, Tosafot says this animal has this Eina Zavuach, this Isur of Eina Zavuach, which predates Yom Kippurim, because before the animal dies, it has this Isur not only of Eivir Minachai, which will disappear when it dies, but you have this Isur of Eina Zavuach. And Eino Zavuach does not disappear when the animal dies, because it remains Eino Zavuach. And therefore, the Isur of Eino Zavuach, which is an Isur Aseh, is there throughout, and blocks the possibility of Yom HaKippurim of taking hold over here. Now, Ravina offers an alternative. Afilu Tamer Rabbanon. Even Rabbanon could be the authors of this position. Rabbanon believe Isur is Chalal Isur. Me, this is how you would frame it. Me, she Isurel Mishum Bal Tochal Chametz Bilvad. Yatza zesh, in Yisro mishum bal tochal chametz bil vad, ela af mishum bal tochal tevel. So now, the way he frames it is that, not that the Yisro chametz disappeared over here, but rather the pasuk is telling us that something that only has the Yisro chametz is ra'ui to be matzah. On the other hand, something that has an Yisro chametz as well as an Yisro tevel, that will not qualify, that will not work. Because only Yisro chametz bil vad works, not Yisro chametz plus Yisro tevel. Now, Gemara says, Midei Bilvad Ktiv. Where does it say Bilvad? That only Isur Chametz. That's not mentioned anywhere. It's not mentioned in the Pasuk. It's not mentioned in the Braita that we brought before. Ela, Mechavarta Ked Rav Sheshet. It's clear that it's like Rav Sheshet, and that the first answer that we gave before is the correct answer, which is that it's authored by Rabbi Shimon. Tanra Banan. Yotzei Adam Yecheivato B'Masir Sheni B'Yerushalayim. A person can use from Matzah Maser Sheni inside of Yerushalayim. Maser Sheni must be taken up to Yerushalayim and eaten inside of Yerushalayim. So here, if one takes the Maser Sheni and eats in Yerushalayim, that works. V'stamad lomar, lechemoni. Well, so you would have thought that that should work. Why shouldn't it work? It's mutar to eat in Yerushalayim and it should be totally fine to eat in Yerushalayim. So tamad lomar, lechemoni. What does Lechem Oni teach us? Mash Nechal Ben Ninut. So the play on the word Oni here, the Pasuk says Lechem Oni with an Ayin, which means poverty, but the play on the word is Oni with an Aleph, which means Aninut. Someone who's in a state of Aninut, someone who is, after the death of a relative that they have to be mitabel for, prior to, on the first day of their death, before they are buried, they're called an Onein. So we have a principle by Ma'asir Sheni, it says, Lo Achalti Be'oni Mimenu. That a person may not eat ve'aninut from ma'aser or ma'aser sheni. So now the play on the pasuk says lechem oni. Mash nechal ve'aninut. The matzah has to be qualified that even an onein could eat it. Yatzazesh eno nechal ve'aninut. Ela b'simcha. The requirement that ma'aser sheni be eaten b'simcha and not ve'aninut precludes it from being used for matzah, which is as a requirement of lechem oni. Oni with, yes, an ayin, but we're playing on that word and saying that it's an aleph. And that an onein has to be able to consume the matzah in order for it to work. Divrei Rabbi Yossi Aglili. That's the position of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Kiv Omer, matzot, matzot, riba. That we have the word matzot in plural number of times, and that's mirabeh, that even this is qualified. Im kein matamular lechem oni. So then what's he going to do with the pasuk of lechem oni? Prat li'isa shinilusha b'yayin b'shemen u'dvash. That comes to exclude matzah shira. Matzah oni is something that's baked, flour and water alone. That's called lechem oni. On the other hand, lechem ashira, or matzah ashira, is when the kemach is put together with wine, oil, dvash, honey, or what we call mei peirot, or possibly eggs, egg matzot. Those are all matzot ashirot, and those are disqualified. So that is for lechem oni. Lechem oni says that you can't have matzah ashira. My time with Rabbi Akiva. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Akiva's position? Miktev lechem oni. The pasuk does not write lechem oni with a vav in it, but rather aniktiv. It's written, the Torah only has ayin, nun, yud. So you would have pronounced it had you not had the misora of how to pronounce it. We would have said that it is ani. But we have a misora to pronounce it as oni, but it's spelt as an ani. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva believes that ani is the proper way to view this, meaning lechem oni with the word ani. Rabbi Yossi Aglili mikrinan ani. We don't read it as ani, oni krinan. We read it, the Masorah tells us to read it as oni. And so because of that, oni is a play on ayin and the aleph, and therefore we say it cannot be eaten by aninut. Rabbi Akiva adir krinan be oni kedishmuel. So then, according to Rabbi Akiva, why isn't it called lechem ani? Why is it called lechem oni? He says, because that's because of the drosha of Shmuel. The Amar Shmuel, lechem oni, lechem shonim alav dvarim harbe. The lechem upon which many things are said. Rashi has an interesting interpretation. He says, shegomrim alav et halel. We finish the halel on it, which is not the case. We end up finishing eating matzah before we ever finish the halel. So that's interesting in itself. Then he also says, we say the haggadah over the matzot. And this actually has an interesting aspect here, which is, if you say, lechem shonim alav dvarim harbe, part of the mitzvah matzah, it seems, is to say the Haggadah over the matzah. That it's not enough just to eat the matzah on the night of Pesach. You have to eat the matzah that has a Haggadah, that has part of the story or retelling the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Otherwise, it's not called lechem. And it might be that someone who has to miss the Haggadah, a woman has to leave the table in order to take care of their children, that they might have to do at least a minimum amount of the Haggadah in order to be yotzei the mitzvah matzah because of this connection that lechem shonim alav darim harbei. The second thing might be able to learn out of this is the obligation of women to say the Haggadah. That generally when it comes to Matzah and Leila Pesach, they're Chayavim or Chayavot in Lechem or in Matzah because it's, even though it's a mitzvah that says as man grama, we have a limud of the connection to Chametz which obligates them in eating Matzah. Whereas in regards to the Haggadah, it's not clear that the women are Chayavot. But if you believe that the Haggadah is integral to the mitzvah of Matzah, then women would also be chayavot in Haggadah, not because of Haggadah vis-a-vis Haggadah, but Haggadah and its impact on Matzah. And this could be a way. There are other ways to discuss about whether women are chayavot or not in Haggadah, but this might be one of the reasons why women might be chayavot in Haggadah, Leila Pesach, because of this lechem she'onim alav dvarim harbe. So that's the first one. The second thing that we need to discuss over here is ein lashim et eisha, et eisa, that one may not put together lechem ashira matzah ashira. The Gemara is about to discuss this, and then we'll come back and discuss Rashi and the Rishonim with regards to this, which is Sover Rabbi Akiva isashin lo shav yain b'shem lo dvash lo. Does Rabbi Akiva really believe that you can't make matzah ashira? V'atanya ein lashim isa b'pesach b'yain b'shem and dvash. One may not make matzah ashira for Pesach. Vimlash, if you do make it, Rabbi Gamliel Omer, Tisaret Miyad, you have to burn it right away, you have to get rid of it right away. Chachamim Omerim, Yochal, you can eat it. Vam Rabbi Akiva, Shavati Aita Itzel, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Yeshua, I was with Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Lezer on Pesach, Ulashti the Hemisa, B'yayim Shem Nedvash, and I made for them bread that was made with Yayim Shem Nedvash, Lomeli Davar, didn't say anything about it. Va'afal Pish, in Lashim, Mikatfim Oto. And even though you cannot be lash, you cannot knead it, mikatfimato, you can baste it. So, atan the Tanakama. That goes according to the Tanakama, who says that it's problematic. So even though it's problematic, they can still baste it. Now, v'chamim amim, etchalashimbo mikatfimbo. If you can make the lash, if you can knead it, then you can baste it with those materials. V'enchalin lashimbo, if you cannot knead with it, then in mikatfimbo, you cannot baste it. So there's no separation between kneading and basting. They both had the same din. But the Chachamim do believe that you can be lash. Meaning that you're allowed to put together these items and make a matzah ashira. B'shavim, she'en lashim et eisa b'poshrim. Everybody agrees that you cannot knead with warm water. So warm water is a problem because it's an accelerator. It accelerates the leavening process. And it's something that's too hard to deal with. So in terms of accelerating the leavening process, we're not going to let you do that. That's number one, according to warm water. Now, everybody, we see from here that the Chachamim and Rabbi Akiva believe that you can make matzah ashira. So how could it be that Rabbi Akiva before says lechem oni comes to exclude matzah ashira? Mar says, lokash, abi yom tov rishon, ami yom tov sheni. That's on the first night, and that's after the first night. Yom tov rishon sheni here is not literally, but on the first night of Pesach, where matzah is a chuvah, and has a requirement of lechem oni, so there we say no matzah ashira. After that point in time, you can have matzah ashira. Basically, lechem oni is a requirement for the first night of Pesach when matzah is a chuvah. When it's an obligation, then you have to have lechem oni for the night of the Haggadah, the night of Pesach. After that point on time in Pesach, you do not have to have lechem oni, and therefore you can have matzah shira. And that'll reconcile these two things. Rabbi Akiva, when he says lechem oni comes to exclude matzah shira, that's on the first night of Pesach, when you have a chuvah, an obligation to eat matzah. When Rabbi Akiva made those matzot for Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yoshua on the position of the Chachamim, that you're allowed to eat matzah shira, that was after the first night of Pesach. After that point in time, there's no obligation to eat matzah. There's just an obligation not to eat chametz. So if you're not going to eat chametz, only lechem you have left is matzah. But that matzah doesn't have to be lechem oni. It could be matzah shira. Could be matzah aniya. Either one. Matzah oni would be made with water. Matzah shira would be made with other materials, mei peirot, as they're called over here. So now, the Gemara continues. Kedamar lehu Rabbi Yeshua libnei. That's what Rabbi Yeshua said to his son. Yom akama lo talushuli b'chalva. On the first day, don't put it together with milk. Mikan v'elech lo shuli b'chalva. After that point in time, you can put it together with milk for me. V'hatanya, what do you mean? What do you mean put it together with milk? Don't we have a brayta in lashim etisha b'chalav? We just saw this before in last week's daf, that you're not allowed to knead dough with milk. V'im lash kol apata surah. If you do knead it with milk, if it's a milchic bread, you have to get rid of it. Because the high likelihood that it's going to lead to a bad problem. The problem is that everybody assumes that bread is parva. And since bread is parva, they're going to eat it with meat or a meat meal. So if you put milk in the bread, how are they going to know that there's milk in the bread? And they're going to come to eat that bread with a fleshic meal, and it'll be a huge problem. So because of that, the Chachamim said you're not allowed to make milchic bread. You're also not allowed to make fleshic bread, but you're not allowed to make milchic bread whatsoever. No bread can be milchic and get a hechsher. So that's why today, no bread that is milchic actually has a hechsher on it. There's one exception to that rule, and that was the English muffins. Thomas's English muffins are milchic, and they do have a hechsher on them. And that is because, as we said before, that if you have something that distinguishes them, or is unique about them, and then you can identify them as being milchic, then it's okay. So everybody knows Thomas's English muffins have a unique design to them, a unique type. Everybody knows what they look like. Because they are unique, then nobody's going to make the mistake and say, oh, Thomas Singer's muffin, that's a power of bread, because everybody knows they're milchic, and they have a unique design or shape to them, and because of that, you can have milchic bread that has a hechsher on it. Otherwise, all bakeries that are milchic will not have hechsher on the bread if they are considered milchic, because that is a huge problem, a problem of hergel aveira. So, elahachi kamar, this must be what he meant. Yom akama lo talushu li bidufsha. On the first night, don't make me matzot that are together with honey. From then onward, you can make it with honey for me. No, it was made with milk. If he makes them in these small balls, then it's okay. Because those are unique, designated. He also says you can eat them in one shot, there's going to be nothing left over. Since there'll be nothing left over, there's no problem. So to over here, it has a unique shape, design to it, or it's clearly identifiable as being milchic bread, or they're small enough quantities that they're going to be consumed immediately, then it's okay, and maybe that was the case over here. But we see this, well, attention about the first night of Pesach, where you have to have lechem oni, where you cannot have the matzah shira. But afterwards, it seems from the Gemara that you can have matzah ashira. Now, we saw the Tosafot yesterday. We'll mention it again here, because Rashi has an unusual position over here. Rashi says, what is the problem with using meid peirot? What's the problem of using fruit juices? The problem of using fruit juices is, mipnei shekrova umemaheret lachmitz, vein adam yecholo shomra. It accelerates the leavening process, and nobody can stay on top of it. So since it's an accelerator for the leavening process, one cannot use mei peirot because of the fear that it will come to chametz. Now, Tosafot and Rabbeinu Tam said yesterday that's absolutely not the case. If you use mei peirot alone, it'll never become chametz, period. There is no chametz whatsoever. Whereas, if you have water and mei peirot together, if you use water plus fruit juices, then it is an accelerator, then it's a problem. But if you simply use mei peirot, there is no chametz. So according to most of the Rishonim, excluding Rashi, then matzah shira is muteret on Pesach. You can eat matzah on Pesach that's made with mei peirot. You can have egg matzahs on Pesach. You can have fruit matzahs on Pesach. No problem whatsoever, based on our Gemara over here, which says that matzah shira is only problematic for the light of the Seder, for the Seder night itself. We saw yesterday that has an impact in terms of Erev HaPesach, because on Erev HaPesach, a matzah ashira cannot be used for the night of Pesach. Therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rav Avadya Yosef and Yechaveh Dat also passes this way. You can eat matzah shira on Erev Pesach because it's not in contrast or contradiction to the matzah that you can eat that night, because that can't come from matzah shira. and therefore he's willing to be matur eating matzah ashira on Erev Pesach, because it's not a problem of ruining your appetite for the matzah that night, which is a totally different matzah. It's a matzah of lechem oni. So that's number one. Number two is, for the remainder of Pesach, except for the first night of Pesach, one could eat matzah ashira. And that is the way that the Shulchan Aruch paskins, and the way the Sfardim are noheg. They're noheg to have matzah ashira for the remainder of Pesach without any problem. The Ashkenazim, on the other hand, the Ramos says that b'midida de'lo, we're noheg not to eat matzah ashira for the remainder of Pesach. And then came, it's a shatat chak, or there's a problem, someone has a big issue with eating the matzot. We don't eat it for the remainder of Pesach, which turns out to be a unbelievable chumrah here. And basically, it's based or premised on Rashi. Rashi Shita over here, who seems to say that mei perot are machmitzin, and we're choshesh for that. The Shu'ut Avnei Nezer has a difficulty with this, because he says, I don't understand. Here we have almost every posek, every Rishon believes that Rashi is incorrect in his assumption over here. And now we all of a sudden be choshesh for a dat yochida, even though it's Rashi, but it's a dat yochid. We're going to be choshesh, and therefore not eat matzah shira on Pesach. And therefore, the Avnei Nezer looks for a different reason why we don't eat matzah shira on Pesach. He says, this can't be the reason why you don't eat matzah shira on Pesach. In the end, he says, because it says, shivat yamim tochalav matzot, that for 7 days you eat matzah. And therefore, he says that all the 7 days have a hekesh between them. And just like on the first night of Pesach, lechem oni is the only thing that's qualified, so too for the remainder of Pesach, even though it's a reshut to eat it, and he plays around with that a little bit. I told you that this isn't so clear, that the remainder of Pesach is a reshut. The Avnei Nezer says, well, if you don't want to eat chametz, then this is the chovah of what you must eat. So really, the matzah on the rest of Pesach is a quasi-chovah. According to the Gra, it's a mitzvah ki you meet. And because of that, the Avnei Nezer says there's a hekesh between all the 7 days of matzah and Pesach. And all the 7 days together, that hekesh tells me that just like on the first night, it's going to be lechem oni. That means for the remainder of Pesach, it also can only be lechem oni. And therefore, the Avnei Nezer says, that's the reason that we don't eat, the Ashkenazim don't eat matzah shira for the remainder of Pesach. But you know, the Rashi Shita over here is a very important Shita. He has tremendous influence on the way that the Ashkenazim practice today, not to eat matzah shira, that's both on Pesach itself as well as on Erev HaPesach. And that derives from this Rashi over here. I sent out the Mikorot so that you can see more in depth this sugya. Now the Gemara continues. Everybody agrees that you cannot knead the dough in warm water. Why is this different than menachot, where we do allow you to knead it in warm water? All menachot can be made in warm water. That's the way they are made. They're made in warm water. As long as you are mishamim, you make sure that they do not become chametz. This Gemara says, wait a minute. Imam rubis rizim, yom rubish ein rizim. Wait a minute, you're dealing with two different issues. You're dealing with an issue where you're dealing with Kohanim in the Mikdash, who have a din of Zrizim, and they're going to take care of it, versus you're dealing with the Hamonam. You're dealing with the remainder of the lay people, the people which are the normal lay people out in society. They're not going to be as careful as the Kohanim. So when you're dealing with Menachot that are under the supervision of the Kohanim, that's one thing. When you're talking about everybody out there, then that's a different story. And so one is Zariz, so therefore we'll say they use hot water, and warm water, and they can take care of it. But outside of the Mikdash, we're not going to allow that. So when it says, Yochi, miltat, lami lotit. If that's the case, why don't we soak the grains as well? We can soak the kernels and use them, even though that might be problematic because they could come to chametz. But if everybody's a Zariz in the Mikdash, then why don't we soak the kernels in the Mikdash? Alama. So why is it that Amar Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Yirma, Mishmol, Chitim Shel Menachot, Ein Lo Tetim Otan? The wheat kernels of Menachot, we don't soak them beforehand. So Amar says, wait a minute. Lisha Bizvizim Ito, Letita Leta Bizvizim. Depends from when the Kohanim get involved in the process. The Kohanim get involved in the process only from the time of flour and onward, because that's how the Mincha is brought. The Mincha is brought with flour to the Mikdash. The soaking of the kernels happens before that time. And that means that's going to be left to the lay people. That's going to be left to the Hamon Am to deal with. So if they're doing that, that's not with the Zrizim. On the other hand, once you reach the point where it's Kemach, it's flour ready, and then you're going to put warm water to it, that's already in the hands of the Kohanim. Therefore, we trust the Kohanim to take care of it. But stuff that comes before that before it ever enters the Mikdash, there we're not going to say it. Mar says, Leisha Me'ita B'Zrizim, it's so true that the Kohanim are the ones who do the kneading over here. V'aktiv, V'yatzaga Le'ashemen, that you anoint it with shemen. This is part of the process of the mincha. And the Gemara learns from that, v'viala kohen, that you bring it to the kohen, and mikamitza velach mitzvat kuna. Only from the time of taking off the kamitza, which is the equivalent of shechita for a mincha is that the kohen takes off the kmitzah from the mincha. And in that case, that's when the kohen has to be involved. But before that time, the kohen does not have to be involved. That means even a Yisroel could be involved in the kneading process here and putting the warm water. So how do you say it's in the hands of Zrizim? It could be in the hands of a Yisroel that's doing this. That teaches you that the yitzika, the pouring of the shemen, the anointing of it with the shemen, and blila, the mixing of it, is kashera, even in the non-kohen. So Amar says, lishan hibidu zrizim leita. You're right. The kneading isn't done by the kohenim themselves. But mamakom zrizimita. It's in the place of the zrizim. It's under their supervision. It's in the migdash. It's somewhere where the kohenim are available and watching over things. And because of that, they'll make sure that doesn't come chametz. Whereas, when you're talking about letita, it's done completely outside of the migdash, and there's no supervision of the kohenim. Damamar, blila kshera bizar. Yes, blila, the mixing and the kneading of the mincha is allowed to be done by a non-kohen, but that's only if it's in the azara. But outside of the azara, it's psula. So therefore you see that it has to do with the location. The location is as important as who's in doing it. So the fuke, letita, the ina brizizim, that letita, the soaking of the kernels, is not done by zizim, not done by kohenim, velo makom zizim, and it's also not done in the mikdash. So because of that, we don't allow people to do this because there's too much risk involved of it becoming chametz, and therefore we don't permit it. But things like blila, which are done inside of the mikdash, under the supervision of the kohanim, will allow that to be done because they'll make sure that it doesn't become chametz. Or it says, "Umay shnami mincha ta'omer." How is this different than mincha ta'omer? The tanya mincha ta'omer lo tutim uta. By mincha ta'omer, you're allowed to soak the grains beforehand. It's ovrim uta, and then you pile it up to allow it to drain, for the water to drain off of it. So the Gemara says, tzibur shiny. Tzibur shiny, Rashi brings down two interpretations. One is tzober shiny, which is that the piling up of it is different and allows the water to drain off, and that's why it's okay. Although Rashi thinks that's a poor choice or explanation here, because the Gemara says tzibur and not tzober. And therefore he says the proper explanation here is tzibur shiny. This is a public thing. This is done under the supervision of Beit Din. Because the Minchat Omer is brought under the supervision of Beit Din. Every action that's done is done with Beit Din present. And because of that, it's done in a public way, then people are going to be watching, it's going to be supervised, and we don't worry about it. So therefore, letita is permitted there, because we do have the proper supervision, we do have the proper zrizim that are involved in the process, in order to ensure that it's not a problem. Tan Rabbanan, yochol yotzei adam yei v'chotto bebikurim. You would think that a person can use bikurim. We've had a number of these. You would think a person can use tevel. You would think a person can use maaser sheni, and each time we reject it. Now we say that you would think a person can use bikurim for matzah. That would mean using chita or so'ura that were bikurim for it. Tamalomer b'chol moshvotechem tuchlu matzot. You should eat matzot in all of your dwelling places. Matzah ne'achelet b'chol moshvotechem. Matzah that can be taken to all of your dwelling places or eaten in all of your dwelling places. Yatsu bikurim she'ne'achelim b'chol moshvotechem. Bikurim have to be eaten inside of Yerushalayim. Ela b'Yerushalayim. So that way, Divrei Rabbi Yossi Aglieri. Rabbi Yossi Aglieri says bikurim cannot be used for matzah because they must be eaten in Yerushalayim. And one of the requirements of matzah is that it be available in Chol Moshvotechem, and it be available anywhere that you dwell. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Matzah Umaror. He has a different way of learning it. Ma Maror She'eno Bikurim. Just like Maror cannot come from Bikurim, Af Matzah She'eno Bikurim, so too Matzah is not Bikurim, because the Bikurim only come from the Shivat HaMinim, that Eretz Yisrael is Nishtabech Bahem, from this week's Parsha, Parshat Ekev. That's the only items that are required to have Bikurim brought from them. And obviously Maror is not one of those items. Tosafot over here discusses why maybe the olive leaves or the olive tree or olives are not considered to be mar, bitter, and they can be used for maror. He says because the mar, the bitterness, is in the tree or in the leaves, not in the olives themselves, and therefore they would not be used for maror. Aside from the fact that you might need something that's be a zriya, that is a vegetable or planted in the ground. But be that as it may, maror is certainly not coming from the bikurim, or bikurim are not brought from an item that is maror. And so Rabbi Akiva says the hekesh between matzah and maror teaches me just like maror doesn't come or doesn't come to bikurim, so to matzah doesn't become bikurim. So Mara says, wait, ima maror she'en bimino bikurim, af matzah she'en bimino bikurim. If that's the case, maybe you should say, just like maror comes from something that doesn't have anything that is brought as bikurim, so to matzah it has to come from things that are not made do not use for bikurim. So tzichitim sarim, that means I can't use wheat and barley. Wheat and barley are one of the shivat aminim, and are brought as bikurim, so maybe they should be precluded or excluded from being used for a matzah. And I have to use one of the other three items mentioned in the Mishnah, which is oat, spelt, or rye. Sheyesh b'minam bikurim. So how do I know that that they have, since they have in their min bikurim, that maybe they shouldn't be used. Tamalom matzot matzot riba. That matzot matzot comes to include them, even though they are brought as bikurim chitim sorim. Nevertheless, since these are not, they themselves are not bikurim, it's okay because of the riboy matzah. I matzot matzot riba. If matzot matzot comes as a riboy, I feel bikurim nami. Then why don't you include bikurim itself? Why do you only say chitan sorah that's not bikurim is okay? Maybe chitan sorah that is bikurim should be okay. So when it says hader bei Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva retracted this position because it doesn't work out for this question that we just asked. That if you're already going to include chitan sorah, which have in their species bikurim, then why not include bikurim themselves as well? And how do I know that he retracted his statement? Titanio, we have a brighter. Yocho yitzei adam chovato bikurim. I would think a person can use bikurim for matzah. Tamalomar b'chol moshvotichen tochlu matzot. You have to eat matzot in all your dwelling places. Matzah nechale b'chol moshvot. Only matzah that can be taken anywhere you want can be used. Yatsu bikurim sheno nechalim b'chol moshvot. Excluded from that are bikurim that cannot be eaten wherever you want. Ella, b'Yerushalayim, but they must be eaten in Yerushalayim. Yocho shani motziach masir shini. So you would think I'd exclude Maaser Sheni from this. This is a good question. Maaser Sheni also can only be eaten in Yerushalayim. So why before do we look for a reason why you can't have Maaser Sheni as matzah because of Lechem Oni, Haninut, and all that that we mentioned before? It's a simple solution. B'chol moshvotechem. You have to be able to eat it anywhere. And Maaser Sheni can only be eaten in Yerushalayim, just like Bikurim. So why don't we say the same thing? Tamalomar, matzot, matzot riba. The matzot, matzot comes and includes it and says Maaser Sheni is not excluded from this. So, my reitel are both maaser sheni, otzi bikurim. Why are you including maaser sheni and excluding bikurim? Why would you differentiate? Both of them have to be eaten in Yerushalayim. So why do I say bikurim? No good for matzah. Maaser sheni? Yes, good for matzah. Now, before, remember, we had a machloket about maaser sheni, whether it's good for matzah or not. Rabbi Yosef clearly said it's not good because of lechem oni. Rabbi Kiva says it is good because of lechem oni. Oni is with the ani, not oni from aninut. So Rabbi Kiva said it was fine to have maaser sheni. So over here we have a braita that seemingly is Rabbi Akiva's position, which is Maaser Sheni is totally fine. Bikurim are a problem. And the limud is from B'chol Moshvotechem. B'chol Moshvotechem should equally affect Bikurim as it does Maaser Sheni. So Gemara says, K'dre Belazar. The reason that Maaser Sheni is different is because of Rabbi Elazar. I'm going to include, therefore, Rabbi Ani Maaser Sheni Sheish Lo Heter B'chol Moshvot. Maaser Sheni does have a possibility of being in all your dwelling places. K'dre Belazar. Motzi Ani Bikurim Shenlem Heter B'chol Moshvot. And Bikurim never have a heter to be eaten outside of Yerushalayim. So what is this, Rabbi Elazar? Dama Rabbi Elazar. Minay the Maaser Sheni shenitma. If Maaser Sheni becomes tameh, these are the actual fruits of Maaser Sheni, not monies that you took up at Yerushalayim, or monies that were spent on fruits in Yerushalayim. Things, once they come into Yerushalayim, fruits in Yerushalayim may not leave Yerushalayim again. So once the fruits are what we call chomot koltot, the walls of Yerushalayim capture them, and they may not leave. So once Maaser Sheni enters into Yerushalayim, you cannot redeem it anymore, and you cannot take it outside of Yerushalayim. Rashi says over here that's an Isur Dirabanan. Tosafot over here says that according to this Gemara over here, we're talking about it's an Isur Doraita. Rabbi Elazar himself might believe it's an Isur Dirabanan, but the Gemara here has to believe that it's an Isur Doraita because we're dashing Psukim Deoraita. Machlok at Rashi Tosafot, we're talking about an Isur Dirabanan or an Isur Doraita. But nevertheless, there's a restriction against taking fruits out of Yerushalayim, Maaser Sheni fruits once they enter into Yerushalayim. Rabbi Elazar says there is one exception to that rule, which is, minayin l'maaser sheni shenitma. If maaser sheni becomes tamei in Yerushalayim, how do I know? Shepodim oto afilu b'Yerushalayim. You're allowed to redeem it even in Yerushalayim. Even though if they were torim, they would be usur to redeem them and usur to take them out of Yerushalayim. Nevertheless, if they become tamei, you're allowed to do this. Tamalomar kilo tuchal se'ito. Now, the pashtuta pasuk means that you're unable to take it up to Yerushalayim, and therefore it's atah kesa b'yadecha. You put it onto money, you take it up to Yerushalayim. So that's the pashtu, the pasuk of seito. But Rabbi Elazar darshins the word seito, ve'ain seit el achida. Lo tuchal seito means you aren't unable to eat it. Since you're unable to eat it, you're allowed to redeem it. What does it mean you're unable to eat it? Well, you're unable to eat it because it became tamei. The maaser sheni became tamei, and now you're not able to eat it. So since you're not able to eat it, therefore you can redeem it. Because that's the end of the pasuk. The end of the pasuk says it's too heavy to carry up to Shalim, so you redeem it. But he's darshining seit not to mean heavy, or a load, or a burden, but rather seit meaning achilan. As you know that, shenemar vayisam asot meit panav. By the brothers, by Yosef, it says there that they took food for the, he gave them food for the trip. So masat, or yisam masat says that they have food items. So seit is used in that context. Man, so now the Gemara says, how do I know this is Rabbi Akiva? Man, shmaile damar maaser sheni nafik bay. Who says the maaser sheni you can use for matzah? That is Rabbi Akiva. And this Braita, who is clearly according to Rabbi Akiva, who says Maaser Sheni is mutar, because it was Rabbi Yosef Glili, Maaser Sheni is still asur. The fact that the Brita says Ma'aseh Sheni is mutar, that's the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. And in that sheet of Rabbi Akiva, we see that he learns Bikurim from B'chol Moshevotechem, which is similar to Rabbi Yossi Aglili. And there we see that Rabbi Akiva retracted his position of learning it out from the Hekesh between Matzah and Moror, but rather learned it out from B'chol Moshevotechem, Shmamina, Hodor Bey. From here, it's clear that Rabbi Akiva retracted his position. Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Tzipo Lehmi Lechemoni. Why doesn't he learn it out of Lechemoni? Why does he have to have Bikurim learned out of B'chol Moshevotechem? Why doesn't he use the same limud he used by Ma'aseh Sheni? Ma'aseh Sheni says Lechemoni, Lechem she'enu nechal ba'aninut. Mi she'nechal ba'oni, yatzeze she'enu nechal b'simcha. Bikurim should be excluded because they have to be eaten b'simcha. So he says, Savaleik Rabbi Shimon. He holds like Rabbi Shimon the Tanya. Bikurim asurim lo'onein. Bikurim may not be eaten by an onein, just similar to Ma'aseh Sheni. Rabbi Shimon, matir. Rabbi Shimon says it's mutar. My time is the Rabbanon. What's the reason behind the Rabbanon? Dichtiv. Lo tu'uchal lechol b'sh'arecha. Because it says there, you may not eat it in your gateways. I mean, you may not eat it outside of Yerushalayim. And included in that pasuk, it says, Chumat Yadcha. Chumat Yadcha, we darshan in there. Chumat Yadcha, it sounds like Chuma. Rav here, they say, Chumat Yadcha, ilu bikurim. That is the bikurim because they have the word yad used by them, which is, Vakakta Kohen Atena Miyadecha. Kohen will take the basket from your hand when you bring out the bikurim to Yerushalayim. So Gemara darshan is that, Chumat Yadcha means bikurim. So in that pasuk is both found bikurim, Deikush bikurim the Maser and Maiser Sheni. So since Ma'aseh Sheni and Bikurim are found in the same pasuk, there's a hekesh between them. Ma Maser asur le'onein, af Bikurim asurim le'onein. So that's the reason behind the Chachamim's position. Just like Maser is asur for onein, so too Bikurim are asur for onein. For Rabbi Shimon, what's his reasoning? Truma karina rachmana. Yes, it's in the same pasuk with Ma'aseh Sheni, and there might be a hekesh, but the Torah calls it Trumat Yadcha, and it calls Bikurim Truma. Kri Truma, just like Truma. Ma Truma mutaret le'onein. Just like Chuma does not have a requirement of Simcha, and therefore can be eaten by Onain, Af Bikurim mutar le'onain, so too Bikurim can be eaten by an Onain. Okay, so Gemara says, okay, so that's based on that, Rabbi Yossi Aglili holds like Rabbi Shimon, that there's no din of Simcha by Bikurim, and there's no restriction of an Onain. So therefore Lechemoni is not going to help him for Bikurim, and that's why he needs B'chol Moshevotechem to teach him by Bikurim. By Ma'aseh Sheni, he'll say the problem is Lechemoni, that it can't be eaten by Onain. By Bikurim, he'll say the problem is B'chol Moshevotechem. Now Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon, he the hekesh lately. Okay, he doesn't have the hekesh between Ma'aseh Sheni and Bikurim. Simcha mi amichtoch tivo. The word simcha, or the requirement for simcha, is written directly inside of Bikurim. Tichtiv, because it says in Pashat Kitavo, samachta b'chol atov. You have to be happy for all the goodness that Hashem gave to you with regards to the Bikurim. So Gemara says, no, that doesn't come to teach you. You have to be happy, but rather, how is man simcha udata? That you only have to bring, you only bring the Bikurim when it's a time of happiness. Ditznan, what is a time of happiness? Mi'atzeret v'arachag, from Shavuot until Sukkot, mevi v'koreh. Person brings Bikurim, and he reads Parshat Bikurim. Mi'achag v'ad Chanukah, from Sukkot until Chanukah time, mevi v'eno koreh. Then he can bring the Bikurim, but he no longer reads the Parshat Bikurim. That is because between Atzeret and Achag is Zman HaSimcha. First of all, you can't bring Bikurim before Shavuot, because the Shtei Alechem that are brought in the Mikdash on that are a Mincha Chadasha. They are the new fruits that are brought. They are the prerequisite for Bikurim because they are mentioned inside of the context of Chagah Bikurim. And so because of that, they are the first Bikurim brought in the Mikdash. So Bikurim only brought from Shavuot and onward. Shavuot is the harvest. And Chag is Zman HaSif. So that's the time that a person is happy. That's the time when a person is enjoying the produce, the fruits of his labor, literally, the fruits of his labor, that which he harvested from the work that he'd done over the winter time. And that's actually this week's Parsha. Parsha Akev talks about that problem during that period of time where a person's happy and looking at his handiwork that he might come to say, Kochi v'otzim yadi asali etachal etzeh. I did all of this. Where's God? God's not here. Part of the mitzvah of Bikurim is to avoid that problem. To say, I got to bring up my first fruits to Yerushalayim and show who's the real person that made this all happen. That's a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that's the antidote. Bracha, saying brachot, and bringing the Bikurim up to Yerushalayim and all of the matnot that we give from these items are the antidote to saying that it's kochi v'otzem yadi asali etachayot hazeh, it's a recognition that Hashem is the one who grants us this. So now the Gemara continues. Tanya Rabbanan. Oh, just before we do that, in terms of Chanukah, why you're allowed to bring Bikurim until Chanukah is because that's the Zman Hava'ah. It's as long as there's still fruits out in the field, you're allowed to bring Bikurim up. And since there's still residual fruits in the field until Chanukah time, therefore you're allowed to bring it up. It also is, or relates to one of the later harvests, the olive harvest in Eretz Yisrael, which happens towards Chanukah time. So that is one of the latest harvests that you have, and therefore there's still things that are being picked or brought in from the field and might relate to why Chanukah is very focused on olive oil. Okay, now we move on in the Gemara. Tanur Banan, lechem oni. It has to be bread of affliction, the bread of the poor, which means prat lachlot. It has the exclusion of bread that is boiled in hot water. Rashi says here it's first, or Tosafot mentioned that it's first baked, and then it's put into boiling hot water. It's similar to like a bagel type of cooking. But whatever reason, this dunking it into this hot water makes it into a richer form of bread. Ula ashisha. Ashisha, Rashi claims, is a large bread. I saw the words definitions of a pancake. It's something that, again, is a richly favored bread. Yocholo, you'd say, adam yichlo toelu pat hadra. You would think lechem oni means you're going to have whole wheat bread. You're going to have to use something that's the lowest on the totem pole. In their day, whole wheat bread, today it's considered to be healthy. In their day, you consider whole wheat bread to be the worst. The rich people only ate that solit nikia, pure white bread. That was considered to be rich if you ate white bread. But whole wheat bread, that was the lowest. That's what the poor people do because they couldn't afford to throw anything away and they couldn't afford to do all the sifting. So that was the whole wheat. You would think that lechem oni means you must use whole wheat bread. Tamalomer matzot matzot riba. Matzot matzot says, no, any lechem is okay. Bafiluk matzot shel shlomo. Even the matzot shlomo, which were made out of the finest flour, the finest white flour, they're still good. Imkei matamalomer lechem oni. So then what's the point of lechem oni? It's prat lechalot ulashisha. That comes to teach you to exclude these items, which are chalot and shisha, which are richer forms of bread. Those are excluded from this. My mashma d'hai shisha lishin d'chashivutahu. Adding the word ashisha means something that is significant or important. Tichtiv. Because it says, by David HaMelech, he brings the Aron up to Yerushalayim, yechalak to cholam to cholam monu Yisrael. He gives out portions to all of Kalal Yisrael, mi'ish vad isha, from man to a woman. Le'ish chalat lechem achat. For each man, he got a loaf of bread. Ve'eshpar echad. Vashisha achat. So you got an eshpar, and you got an ashisha. Bamar avchanan amar baraba. Eshpar. What is an eshpar? Echad mishisha bepar. 1/6 of a par. He got a portion of meat. Ashisha. What's ashisha? Echad mishisha be'efa. 1/6 of an efa. Even though that's a dry measure, but 1/6 of an efa of this type of bread that we're talking about. Upliga de shmol. This argument is a shmol. Damar shmol. Ashisha garba dechama. Dechamra. That a shisha is really a flask or a measurement of wine. Dichtiv. Vahavei ashishei anavim. Those that love the ashishei, the richness or the drink of the grapes, meaning wine, that follow after the wine. So therefore it's considered to be wine. Ashish is wine. So he gave them wine. Even though efa, again, is a dry measurement, nevertheless, he's using it to describe the wine. Makes more sense according to the first explanation of Rav Hanan bar Abba that it's talking about bread, which is a dry good, rather than wine. But here we have a machloka that's to what ashisha is, whether it means wine or it means something of a bread. But again, in both cases, it's something of chashivut, it's something of significance. And that's what's excluded. Lechem oni excludes things that are of significance, but doesn't it tell us what type of flour must be used. It can be fine flour, it can be white flour, it can be whole wheat flour. Tarabanan, enofim pat ava bepesach. You're not allowed to bake thick matzot for Pesach. Divrei Beit Shammai. That's the position of Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel matirim. Beit Hillel says it's totally fine. Uvakama pat ava. How thick is patava that you're allowed to bake for matzot and pesach? And Rav Huna, tefach. That you can be a tefach. Shei matzinu belechem apanim tefach. Because a lechem apanim, which cannot be chametz, we know they have to be a tefach, as Rashi says, because lechem hapanim have to have panim. And the Gemara learns that a panim or a face has to be at least a tefach. They were folded up a tefach, and they had a thickness to them of a tefach, and they were still considered to be matzah and not lechem and not to be chametz. So too over here, you can bake a matzah that's a tefach thick, and it could be classified as matzah, no problem. It's clear here from the Gemara, the matzot that we have today are nothing like the matzot that they had in their day, much more along the Teimani or the Sfardim, what they do today, which is they had a lafa, the equivalent of a lafa that they used to eat the Korban HaPesach, which makes a lot of sense, a matzot umarorim yochlu, which was basically a big shawarma. You have maror inside with the roasted meat and a lafa. Make a lot of sense to eat. It'd be very hard to eat with these hard cracker wafer matzahs, that which was described in a matzot umarorim yochlu. And it's clear here from the Gemara that they had matzot that were at least a tefach thick, and those were considered to be totally kosher. We, because we're choshesh for all the problems of raw dough being on the inside and not being able to shomer, so we have super hakpadot and super machmir for chametz, and therefore we make ours super thin and we make them in very short time periods because we are not experts in taking care of the chametz. But what is clear, and from the Gemara following on, we'll see this, is that their matzot were significantly thicker than ours and softer than ours, because they were thick. Once they're thicker, they're also going to be softer. And they had something, again, along the lines of the Teimani matzot or the Sfaradim, which have with these lafa, and not the matzot, the hard cracker matzot that we have today. Okay, we're going to stop over here.